Fresh, or you give Perek Yigimel, starting today a new sugya, the sugya of Perek Yigimel. By everyone that day, Yemokar Niftachim Beis David Liyashva Yerushalayim Lechatos Ulenida. On that day, it will be opened a new source, a makor, a new fountain for the family of David Liyashva Yerushalayim Lechatos Ulenida. Two words which mean the same thing. Kechatos means for atonement, like a paraduma. Paraduma is the chatos. The chatos is atonement, is a purification in this context. Ulenida also means for purification. Many times we have this idea, one word can mean two extremes. You have a nida means a woman who is banished, a woman who is pushed away because she is ritually impure. But on the other hand, lenida means her purification. Why in some places does it mean, normally you have to manipulate the vowels. Okay, I'm not sure, I'm sure that there must be some manipulation here. We have to maybe study in more detail. Maybe we'll see in a moment. Let us run through the pesukim and we'll come back and explain everything in much more detail as we read the mefarshim. Pasuk beis v'hoyu bayom hu num Hashem tzevakos. Those who joined us from page 838.
I'm surprised it doesn't say lechatos instead of lechatas.
Right here it says lechatas. Here's
why not lechatos?
So it's probably a smichos. Lechatas ulenida. Okay, we have to see. Okay, we'll try to see. We'll try to uncover something. Pasuk beis v'hayabayim u'abiyon ateinu mashem tzvokas achris. I will cut off eshmeis ha'at sabim min aretz. I will cut off the names of the idols from the earth, they will no longer be remembered. I will also remove the prophets. Now here this refers to the false prophets. This sounds like a pasuk out of Sefer Yirmiyahu or Yechezkel, where when it says the word Nevi'im, probably most of the time it refers to the false prophets, not to the real prophets. On that time I will cut off, they will not be remembered. And the Ruach HaTumah Avir Minaretz, Pasuk Gimel Vahoyan will be Kibavei Ish Oit, when the man will prophesize, V'amri Lov Ove V'imo Yo Lidov Lo Sichya. So they'll say to him, Ove V'imo Yo Lidov, his father and mother who have given birth to him. Okay, they'll say, Ovi v'imo yo lidov lo sichye ki sheker dibarta b'shem Hashem. They'll curse him that you are a disgrace to your parents. So we have to see this in more detail, but they're going to say that when a person, this is a very basic idea, that when a person succeeds in this world, people right away, they study their parents. What did their parents do to bring into this world a child that has accomplished such good things? And Rachmana Litzlan, the other way around, when a person is a miserable person and brings to this world grief and pain, they look at the parents. They say, what did you do? What did you do to produce such a horror to this world? A person comes from somewhere. A person doesn't just come out of nowhere. A person is a product of a home. And you immediately look at where the person comes from. I always like to tell you very quickly this thing, which it's amazing, how I think just spot on, where I daven, now it's no longer relevant because the person doesn't come anymore, but there used to be a person where I daven ma'ariv. In the morning, there's a koilel. And in the koilel, he has a... And then this person runs the kollel. He's a gigantic person. He's like Oydi Melech Habasha, and he doesn't fit in a regular chair. So they have for him a very large reclining chair to sit down in because he just doesn't fit in a regular chair. Simple as that. And a shtender. Okay, and it's a beautiful chair. You know, it's a very luscious, comfortable chair, and it's in the Beis Medrash. And the rabbi of the shul, by the way, he sits on a regular chair. The rabbi sits in the front, you know, by where the rabbi ordinarily sits, on a regular shtender in a chair. And this Talmud Chacham, who he's not here, he doesn't come anymore, but when he used to come, he sat in the middle of the Beis Medrash with a gigantic chair and shtender. That was his place. So he leaves the Beis Medrash about 7 o'clock, and they have a meeting for Maariv at 9:30. And then who comes to Maariv? People, all different types of people come to Maariv, from the neighbor, from the block, and a lot of children come to Maariv. And I always notice some kids, they walk into the basement, they see this big, comfortable recliner chair with the shtender, and they have this need to sit down in that chair. They have a need. They want to sit down in that chair. And adults also sometimes sit down in that chair. To me, it bothers me very much, because you can tell that this is set aside for a special person. You're not that special person. What are you sitting there? You don't sit down in your father's chair. At home, at the head of the table, no one would dare sit down in the chair of his, maybe they would, I don't know. They don't sit down. Normally, we were raised. You don't sit in your father's seat. So I noticed these, some kids, they come in and they sit in that chair. They have this need to sit in that chair when they come to Maariv 5 minutes early. And there are other kids that wouldn't dare. They wouldn't dare sit in that chair. They wouldn't even think about it. And I look at the kids, and I know most of their parents, and it's 100% the same. The kids that sit in that chair were not raised by their parents. Their parents, these kids are basically weeds. The parents give birth to them. The parents are out to lunch. The parents are wild people. Wild, wild people. They don't know what's going on. So when you have wild, when you don't raise your children are just hefker. So they come into shul, they see a nice chair, they sit down in it. The children that wouldn't even think about sitting in the chair, they come from very choshuva homes. Their parents raise them. Their parents discipline them. The parents are watching them. The parents give them musa. The parents raise them the way a parent should raise a child. And naturally it trickles down that when they come into a public place, and there is a chair with a shtender, which obviously is set aside for a special person, I'm not that person. I don't belong sitting down in this chair. They wouldn't even fathom to go sit in that chair. They go to their place. They're quiet. But unfortunately, the parents, who are wild people, and when I talk to them, when I talk to the parents, I always walk away from them like, you're nuts. You totally live in your own world. You're totally a wild man. Yeah, when their kids come to shul, that's right. That's where they go, and they gravitate to. A person is a product of a home. That's the way it is. Every person, whatever they do in this world, they are just basically revealing where they come from. A child is mind. It's not only his mind; it's everything. It's wet cement. The way you raise children, it's pashut, has enormous effects on the way they behave later in life. It's not always the case. We all know that. Okay, we all know that. We all know that there are parents that did everything you can possibly do correct, and unfortunately, Rahman Lutzlan doesn't work out. And we know there are parents that have done everything wrong you could possibly do, and they have children that are the envy of the entire world. So we know there are many exceptions. We know that good and well. Okay, I'm not making believe over here. We know there are many, many exceptions, but the norm is child is a product of a home. That's the default. And that's what it says here in this pasuk. When this person over here becomes a false not prophet, and he says words that are totally nasty and sheker, what do people say? They don't curse the child, they curse the parents.
From last week's parasha, Hotzei
Es HaMakalel,
it says,
Shemimo, Shlomis Bas
Devri, that's the
Losh,
that's what it says
on
all the
Mephoshim. By the Shlomis Bas Devri, the person that was the Makalel was a product of a home.
It doesn't say his name, it says her name.
Her name, because she had no father.
Just to tell
he had no father. He wasn't raised, or she was also problematic. She was the one who also, she was also a person, a Bas Koyin, Ki Seichel is nice. Es she has profaned her father. Is the father responsible? It's like I told you, today in the 21st century, they'll tell you, oh, you know what I just said now, they're gonna shoot me. I was on some blog or some, Twitter would shut me down. Because they would say, no, 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 you're not allowed to say that. You're not allowed to say that. Every person is their own person. How could you go talk like that? Okay, I know that in this generation, you're allowed to say it because, and the truth is, there is some truth to it because we live in a very complicated world and there are many people, Rahman, like I just told you, that don't turn out the way which you put into them. But that's the exception. That is the exception. There are exceptions, Rahman Islam, but the norm is a child is a product of the home, and that's exactly what it says here in this pasuk, that if this person over here has gone, thank you, and this person over here has gone and done something that is horrible, so what do people say? They say, they blame the parents. The Amru on page 840, the Amru Elof, they say to him, Aviv the imo yo ledov lo sikhye. They don't curse him, they curse the parents. Your parents put into this world a curse, a person that is nothing but trouble. So they blame the parents. They don't even blame the child. Ki sheker dibarta, you have spoken falsehood, b'shem Hashem, u de karuhu, and they will stab him, avihu v'imo yoludav b'hinovo, and they, here we have to see more precisely what it is, we'll see in a few moments, they shall be stabbed for bringing to this world a person who has prophesied words of falsehood. Let's read, we'll come back to this in one moment. Let's read a little bit more and then we'll go through it in much more detail. Pasuk Dalet,
why
do you
have to repeat your dad?
Okay, we're going to go through, we're going to analyze it. Okay, we're going to go through it. We're going to see, we're going to analyze it. We're going to spend time on this. We're going to analyze it. We'll just run through it so we can get the basic gist of what's going on, and then we're going to go back and study this in more detail. Pasuk Dalet. On that day, they will dry up the false prophets. Each person will dry up from his false prophecy, from his vision, when he gives over his prophecy. He will no longer wear a cloak of hair in order to lie. Okay, let's just hold off. Let's just get the basic words. There's a lot of depth in these psukim. Some practical examples in the 21st century. We'll come to this in a few moments. Let's get one more psukim. We'll go back. The Omar, lo navi anochi. He will say, I'm not a navi. Ish oyved adama anochi. I'm a farmer. I just serve the earth. Ki adam hik nani min urai. A man has acquired me from my youth. Let's hold off. The Amar Elof. Mohamakos Elabein Yodecha. What is this between your hands? These wounds. The Amar Asher Hu Kesi Beis Me'ahavoi. I've been smitten by the home of those who love me. What is going on? Let's now go through this very slowly and carefully. Back to Pasuk Aleph on the previous page. Previous page on Pasuk page 838. Mitsudois David. Okay, the pasuk begins. Pasuk Aleph. There is no pasuk. There is no Aleph. Oh, yeah, makor niftach. Okay, it's going to be on that day. There will be a makor, will be opened up. What is a makor? A makor is a fountain, a mayon, a spring. A new spring will open up. Yenoivea mai mitachas miftan habayis. This refers to a spring from underneath the foundation of the Beis HaMikdash. V'hanachal ha'amor b'nevuas Yecheskel, v'hamayon ha'amor b'nevuas Yoyel, v'mayim chayim ha'amor b'soif ha'sefer. Mitzudas David says that this mayon that we are referring to already appeared three other places in Tanakh, and here it is number four. It appears in Sefer Yecheskel, it appears in Sefer Yoyel, and appears at the end of the Sefer, and here it appears again. And that refers to this trickle in the Sefer Yecheskel. It is the most elaborate, where it describes what sounds like a nuclear war. It almost sounds like we're describing the fallout of radiation. That's a lot of people like, that's what it seems to be saying over there. Chas v'shalom, it seems like the world is contaminated. There is something poison in the world, and the world is sick. And it says when Mashiach will come, suddenly there's going to be a trickle of water that's going to come forth from the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, this trickle of water is going to be so, so small. It will be the width of the carne, the antenna of a locust. Of a locust, of some type of little creature. It will be almost, you need a microscope to see how small this little trickle, this stream of water, how much water is comes forth from the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And then it will leave the Kodesh HaKadoshim, will trickle into the Kodesh, and from the Kodesh into the Azara. And then it'll make a right, or if you're facing the Kodesh HaKadoshim, it will make a left, all depends on your perspective. And then it's going to go out to the Shar HaMayim, and then it's going to trickle out to you, to the Har HaBayis, and then into Yerushalayim, and then to the entire world. And the Pesukim describe it as this trickle of water that is the width of the antenna of a locust. As it leaves the Kodesh HaKadoshim, it gets wider and wider and wider until it becomes a roaring river. A river that is so powerful and so strong that even the biggest ships can't cross over this river because of its enormous power and might, all starting out as a teeny little trickle of water. And this stream, this little trickle, which turns into a little stream, into a river, into a massive force of water, will be the source of healing to the entire world. It will be the cure, not just the vaccine. The cure to the disease, to the illness that this world is suffering from. It will come forth from the Kodesh HaKadoshim. This is elaborated upon in very detail in Sefer Yecheskel. Once upon a time we learned this, and we learned in Yoel also, there's a mention of this much more briefly, and it will appear again at the end of the Sefer and only a few psukim from here. And here it says it as well. That is what we're referring to in the understanding of the Mitzudas David, when the Pasuk here in Perek Yigimel says that on that day a Makar Niftach will be opened, referencing the Makar, the spring of water that appears in Sefer Yecheskel. Okay, next. Next words are on the base David. Litzorech, what does it mean here? That means Litzorech, for the purpose of David. Litzorech base David, Yeshu Yishalayim, Lechatas. What's this unusual word here? Lechatas. Lakachas mimenu mechatas lahazois al tenei mesim. This spring, there's no mention of this in Sefer Yecheskel. This water is the Mayim Chaim that will be used by the Kohanim to be Mekadesh the Mech Lechatas. In order to achieve purification, we know that the person needs to be sprinkled on his body with water that has been sanctified with the ashes of the Pora Aduma on day 3 and day 7 of his purification process. Anyone that comes in contact with the dead is a Tamei Meis, is an Avatuma, and needs not only must he go to Mikvah, he also needs to be sprinkled with the water that has been sanctified with the ash of the Pora Aduma, day 3, day 7, and then go to Mikvah again. And then when day 7 is over, in the evening, he is tahor. Now this water has very strict rules. It has to come from a mayon, mayim chayim. There are 3 types of water. Anyone that studies the laws of mikvois, mishnayis, there are 3 types of water. There is called a mikve mayim, which that's what we have mostly today, a gathering of water. And then there's something called... And a mikveh means you have to 40 saw of water, and the water is just a collection of water. As long as it has to be ashboire, which means the water has to be stationary. The water may not be moving. If you go to a mikveh today, and the filter is on, the filter is in operation, usually the mikveh is not kosher, because it's no longer ashboire. There are different types of filters, different type of modern mikvehs. But I remember once going to a mikvah, I think it was the last time I went to the mikvah before COVID. Okay, before they shut down all the mikvahs. See, I went to a mikvah, I used to go to mikvah on a Schlidman shul. So they were doing construction. They were doing massive, major construction. They redid the whole mikvah from top to bottom. So I went to a different mikvah, and it was the last week COVID already was breaking out, and people were getting very, very nervous. And even in the mikvah, people were getting very nervous, and that week was very bizarre. The filter was on, which means they had a filter in that mikvah where the water is basically pumped out of the mikvah into a filter, and the filter does its thing and then pumps the water back into the mikvah. So that type of filter, when it's on, it destroys the mikvah. Because the mikveh is now the water in the tub, in the sauna is moving. It's not called Ashboiren, it's called Zoichalin. Zoichalin means it's in motion. No good. Okay, so you have to have a mikveh, a regular mikveh, 40 sod, has to be Ashboiren. This is the second mikveh, which the water has come from a mayon, meaning the water is not rainwater. The water that you are immersing in is water that has come from a fountain, a spring. That type of water, even if it's been separated, let's say it's been separated from the mayon, it's no longer connected to the mayon, it doesn't need to be stationary. It can be in motion. In other words, if you were to fill up a modern day mikveh, a tub, like in all of the mikvahs all over the world, with spring water instead of rainwater, then you can leave the filter on. The filter can be in operation and it can be zoichalin and it's kosher. That's the second, and also that mikveh doesn't even need 40 sa. You can be tovel in such a mikveh even if there's less than 40 sa. Mayon water is it's a different, you don't pay much attention to this in the Gemara, but it's clear as day in the Mishnayis, it's a whole different league. And then there is the third level, which is a very powerful mikveh called a mayim chayim. Mayim chayim means not only is the water spring water, not only do you not need it there to be 40 saw, and the water can flow, if the water is connected directly to the spring, it's flowing from the source, that upgrades this body of water to what is called mayim chayim. And it is only mayim chayim that is fit to pure to use for Para Aduma. When you take the ashes of the Para Aduma and you add water, and then you take that water to sprinkle upon a person who is Tameh, the water must come from Mayim Chayim. And likewise, a Mitzoyra and a Zava can only immerse in Mayim Chayim. So there are three levels of mikvahs. There's the mikveh mayim, which we use today, because we don't need better than that. A nida only needs a mikveh mayim. There's no need for mayim chayim. There's no need today, there's no benefit today in a mikveh that's mayim chayim. So you have a mikveh mayim, and then there's this middle madrega called a mayon shenifsak, and then there is something called mayim chayim. These are bodies of water which a person can immerse in, or use this water for specific needs. These are the three major categories of water. Here we are discussing the chatas, the para aduma. The para aduma demands the water that is used to, the water that will be taken and mixed with the ashes must come from what's called mayim chayim. And this makor, this spring, is exactly what we're describing in this pasuk. So we go back to the mitzvah of the stavet, l'chatos. And by the way, there is one thing that it is relevant today. We gave a whole shiur on this once, and that is if you want today to go to the Har Habayis. I don't know if anyone over here, Mark, do you ever go to the Har Habayis? You ever go up to the Har Habayis? Okay, this is a controversial thing. Go hashkafically and halachically.
In our neighborhood, the rabbi pushes it.
Okay, this is a very, very big topic. Halachically and hashkafically, the inyan of going today on the Har Habayis. And, okay, there's a hashkafic issue, which is not for now, but there's a halachic issue. Is a person allowed, Bizman said, when we were all Tamei Meis, to go on the Har Habayis? And the answer is, well, pretty much yes, you're allowed, because the Har Habayis is called Machane Leviyah. Machane Leviyah. And Machane Leviyah, a person who is Tamei Meis, is permitted to enter into Machane Leviyah. We learn from Moshe. Vayikach Moshe's atzmos yosef imoy b'mechitzosai. So Tamei Meis is allowed to go on Har Habayis. It's called Machane Leviyah. Now, on Har Habayis, there is a small section, a very small section, which is Machane Shechina, is the exact location where the Mikdash once stood. Now, do we know exactly where the Mikdash once stood? Well, that's a good question. Some will tell you more or less. More or less we do. And many will tell you we have enough information to rely upon that. So as long as you go on the Harabayis and you do not enter the section that it is understood to be the basic area where the Mikdash once stood, a Tamei Meis has not done anything wrong. But there's another issue which many people bring up, and this is a very big halachic debate, and that is on Har Habayis in the entire Machane Levia, it is categorically forbidden for a Zav or a Zava to enter. It's true, someone who's Tamei Meis or someone who is a Baal Keri can go without any problem into Machane Levia. But a Zav, a Zava, or a Mitzoyra may not. They must be sent outside of Machane Levia. Okay, so we don't have a Mitzoyra today. We don't have that today. But there's a very big debate amongst the Poskim. Is it possible that today somebody, a man or a woman, is a biblical Zav or Zava? Now, by a woman, it's much more possible. Because a woman, if a woman sees dam 3 days in a row, not in her regular nida cycle, a woman for some reason is suffering from some ailment, and she sees blood 3 days in a row outside the regular expected period, outside of that tekufa when she expects to have a normal release of dam. If it's eight days later than when she saw blood, and she sees blood 3 days in a row, the Pashto says she's a Nida, she's a Zava Gedola. Now, it's not relevant when it comes to anything else, because what does a Zava Gedola need to do? She needs to observe Zayin Nikim. Okay, that's not a problem. Anyway, the Zman is a Noshma very Machmir, and all the laws of Nida, there are all these Chumas. But here's the difference. A Nida only needs to go to a regular mikvah to become pure for her husband. But to go into the Har Habayis, she needs to purify herself from her Ziva contamination. And that demands that she immerse in Mayim Chayim, not just in regular mikvah water. Now, what about a man? So a man, we don't even know this. A man has an emission 2 days in a row, only 2 days, only 3 days. He becomes a full-fledged Zav. Now, problem is we do not know what is called Keri and what is called Zov. There's no knowledge. We don't know what this is. And because we do not know what this is, there are those Rabbanim who suggest, since we don't know what this is, we don't know the difference between Keri and Zov, we don't really know. So therefore a person should worry, we don't know, that maybe every single man at some point in his life became a Zov. And that would mean that a man has to observe Zayin Nikim. Fine, so many men can say, okay, even if I became a Zav, for the last 7 days, I'm clean. Excellent. But you also have to immerse in a Mayon, in Mayim Chayim. So this is an extra layer of stringency that some actually do. That before they go...
It is the custom of people who go up there to go to mikvah.
No, that doesn't mean the mikvah. That going to mikvah is just to make you feel good. It does absolutely nothing going to mikvah. Mikvah, a person who's a tamei meis, you can go, according to the halacha, you can go directly from touching a dead body to Har Habayis.
The second thing is, they don't even go up the stairs. They're
on the Har Habayis. They don't go to the, they're not allowed. They don't go with it. When they go on the Har Habayis, they're not going, there. No one, according to any opinion, is allowed to go to the area where of the Mikdash, of where the Azara once stood. where the Azara once stood is a very small, teeny little area. It's 187 amos by 135 amos.
I'm just telling you what they
I know they do. They go to mikvah just you know, it's a nice thing. You go to mikvah. It's a nice thing to do. You go to mikvah. Okay, you take off your shoes because you're not supposed to wear shoes in the whole harbais. And the whole harbais, you're not supposed to wear leather shoes. So you wear sneakers. Or you wear sneakers. You don't wear leather shoes because that's the halacha. You don't, as respect for the harbayis, you don't wear mikvah. Yeah, it's nice to go to the mikvah, but there's no requirement to go to mikvah. A tamei meis is allowed. A tamei meis is allowed to go. Is allowed to go. And a baal keri is also allowed. Is also allowed to be on the har. If I'm not mistaken, is allowed to be on the harbayis. So why do you go to mikvah? You go to mikvah because like people you go to mikvah erev Shabbos, Tosefes Kedusha. A tamei meis is permitted to go on the harbayis, but a tamei meis is not a penalty of kares or misa de shemayim to go into the machane shechina. What is machane shechina? A little area that's 187 amos by 135 amos. Do we know today where machane shechina is, exactly where the Beis HaMikdash stood? We really do not. We really do not know exactly where it is. There are some educated guesses of where it once stood. So the people who go to Har Bayis, they're very careful not to go anywhere where it may possibly be the Mokoim of Machane Shechina. They know exactly, they have the basic areas of where it's likely where the Azor stood. So they don't go in that area. They're very, very careful. Thank you. They're very, very careful not to go in that little section. And that's fine. But there is another issue, and that is just entering anywhere within 500 amos by 500 amos of the Har Habayis, a person who is a Zav or a Zava may not go until they have Zayin Nikiyim and they go Toivel in a Mayon, in Mayim Chayim. So there are people that do this. There are people, in order to protect themselves, they go and they observe Zayin Nikiyim and they have Toivel in a Mayon. They go to a Mayan is a shayla, is an ocean called a Mayan. That's a machlekes in the Mishnayos, is an ocean called a Mayan, but they're toivel in a real Mayan, and therefore they're safe. They're safe, they've been vaccinated. There's nothing to worry about. They're not, even in the event that they were a Zav or a Zav a Gedoyla, they had Zayin Nikiyim, the best that they could. And why not? You know, if you clean, you clean, and you go into a Mayan. So what's the problem? But unfortunately, many people don't. Many people, they just let's go to the Har Bayis. The rabbi said to go to the Har Bayis. Okay, because they're going to tell you that b'zman hazeh it's not shaykh to become a zav or zav gedoyla. All right, listen. To become a zav gedoyla is a lot easier. Because a Zava Gedoyla, you don't need to have anything special. It's just regular, any blood, any dam. There's any release of blood whatsoever that makes a woman into a Zava Gedoyla. If that blood happens 8 days after she has a period. If a woman sees blood 3 days in a row, 8 days after she has a period, and then L'chayru, she's a Zava Gedoyla deraisa. I don't know how you can get away from that. Does that happen? Some women will tell you, never happened. Impossible, never happened to them. Very good, Baruch Hashem. Healthy people, it should never happen to a healthy person. But it could be that there are women who, you know, some people, they have a cold, they have this, I don't know, there's a virus, and all different, the body does all these unpredictable things. And if a woman sees blood 3 days in a row after her period, then she's a Zava Gedoyla. It's not such a problem, because women anyway observe Zayin Nikiyim. Anyway, they observe Zayin Nikiyim. So she observes Zayin Nikiyim, and she goes to mikvah. So instead of going to a mikvah, she goes to a Mayan. I'm sure there must be a place in Eretz Yisrael where you can go to a Mayan, where women go to a Mayan instead of a mikvah. I'm sure there must be, has to be. And then fine, so then you're no longer. A man is probably much harder, because many will argue and will tell you that by a man, it's a certain type of serious emission, which is not the typical thing that a person today could experience. So men, people will tell you, it's not even shaykh. Good, halavai, I'm all for it. And probably most people don't take this idea seriously. But the reason why I'm telling you this over here is because there is a level of water that is necessary for immersion, and that's called mayim chayim. There's a mikvah, and then there is water that came from a spring which is not connected to its source. That's not called mayim chayim. Mayim chayim means the water is connected to a living spring. When it comes time of the Mashiach, they're going to need to go and make mayim, to make para aduma water.
That's why the machlokus is when the wave from the ocean, if it's still connected to the water or it's separated. So the water is falling down on you, but connected.
Is it separated? Is it separated? The gal, which falls upon the person, is it called mayim chayim? So when they're going to take water, they're going to take water to use for the preparation, sometimes of the paraduma lechatos, it has to come from the makor. What it says here in the beginning of the pasuk. Okay, we spent too much time on this. Lechatos lekachas men lechatos lahazois al tamei meisa. I'm going to go here to the mitzvah stavin on page 838 in the mitzvah stavin in pasuk aleph. Ki mechatos tzrichim sheyiyu mayim chayim. The noivim and flowing. That's what mayim chayim is. That's why I spent all this time to show off to you my gaiva. Because I only spent a lot of time learning this not so long ago. I heard the chavrusa who teaches this to me in the afternoon to teach me these laws of mikvos. We just spent a lot of time on this, so that's why I'm a little bit more familiar.
Do you have any place with mayim chayim like in America or anywhere?
Good question. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. He's asking here. Eliezer is asking in America. Is there any place you can be toivel as a mayim chayim? Now, what about the ocean? Go to the beach. I'm not so sure. If I'm not mistaken, the oceans have a machloikis. If the ocean is called mayim chayim, because even though the rivers flow into the ocean, I think it's a machloikis in the Mishnayis. If the oceans have the status of a mayim chayim. Okay, oceans, obviously, you know, all of them, the fountains, they flow, but it's indirect. It's not the primary source. A mayim chayim is pretty much a river. No, I'm sorry, not a river. That's megashama. I take that back. I'm sorry. Like, most rivers are megashama. They're rainwater. That's snow and ice melting in the mountains. A spring is a spring. Okay, it's from the ground. It comes out of the ground. I don't know. I don't know in America. There must be. I'm sure there must be. There must be some springs in America where you could surreptitiously immerse. Make sure you don't get caught on camera. Okay, some national park.
What is a lake? A lake?
A lake, I'm assuming every lake is different. I'm assuming in Halacha, every lake you have to it has to be analyzed. Where did the water come from? Is it like some lakes are just really swamps? It's just, you know, a collection of rainwater that melted the end of a river. No, the end of the river drains into a swamp, into some big lake, and then there are certainly lakes that are fountains. You know, they're mayim chayim. I don't know. It has to be that every lake has a different din. What is Lakewood? What is Lakewood? What kind of, where's the lake in Lakewood? Has anyone seen the lake in Lakewood?
Probably was one.
I'm sorry?
The Torah.
Ahoy kol tzomi l'chul mayim, ein mayim el Torah. I don't know. I don't know these things.
In California, you have a lake.
It's Mayim Tipshim.
Chas v'shal. That's not nice to say. Chas v'shal.
That's why you
said it's the water. I'm not talking about lake. I'm talking about the water.
There are some good people in Lakewood also. Not everyone.
It's not recycled.
Not water. Everyone is corrupt. Not everyone. Okay, let's go further. Let's go. Lanida. What is Lanida? Next word will be Lanida. Letzarech Tevilas Hanida. So see, I told you before, it means for purification. Mei nida. In Parshas Chukas, it says the word mei nida, which means water of purification. But that's not how the Mitzvah stuff it translates the words over here. It means litzorech tevilas nida. For the immersion of a nida, v'av she'en etzricha davka bias mayim chayim. A nida does not need mayim chayim. She can immerse in rainwater. Or like today we have a bore. You have some rainwater that goes into a little pit, and you have a nice, beautiful marble sauna that's heated and is cleaned and has lots of chlorine and all these chemicals to make sure it's nice, and they go and they open up the plug to do hashaka, to connect it to the bar. By the way, you know, to me it's very funny because the water in the bar is filthy dirty. And just because they scrub the mikvah spotlessly clean and they put in chlorine and they put in baking soda. See, in the shul I daven, they put in now the person, they're a very generous person. He rebuilt the mikvah from the ground up. He totally over corona, when there was anyway, everything was shut down. He started before, he put an enormous, I don't know how much it cost, but it must have cost an enormous amount of money. They demolished the entire thing and they rebuilt it from ground up. They brought back the guy who made the mikvah 30 years ago to, you know, reanalyze the kashrus of the mikvah. He himself said he doesn't have any clue what's going on here. How he did it himself. He's the one who set up the bar and this and that. There are three boyreis. They redid everything from ground up. It's a very good learning experience to understand how a mikvah really works from the inside. And one thing I find now very interesting is the person who redid the mikvah, he now became in charge, and it's a full-time job. I don't know how he has time to go to work. He works the whole day, this guy, but he comes every night to check out the mikvah. And what takes all the time is chlorine. He became a chemist. This guy, Mamish, became a chemist. He comes every night with a sophisticated testing equipment to test the water for cleanliness, for bacteria, and he has all of these different gadgets and these chemicals and baking soda, and he explains to me that the pH has to be this number in order that this should work, so that works. The guy became a chemist. Baruch Hashem, finally, someone came along to make sure that it's safe. It should be safe. People get cellulitis. They get terrible things to go through. We don't go to a clean mikvah. But to me, what's very bizarre is the mikvah can be spotlessly clean, but the mikvah is not kosher until you open that plug for 1 second and do hashoka with the bar. The bar water is filthy dirty. So when you open the bar, all the water, all the dirt, the dirty water from the bar, you know, gets all diluted. It goes into the mikvah. I know it gets diluted anyway, but eventually they close the plug, and they trap in the bar that water which is not being treated. The water in the bar is not being cleaned. It's not being treated. I mean, eventually it gets, you know, the water from the regular mikvah mingles with that water. Everything gets diluted, so it is to a certain degree, but it's not being tested. It's not being treated. And when you open the plug, that dirt goes into the mikvah. So it's not so pashut. And of course, they compensate for that by treating the water of the mikvah with, you know, with a lot of chemicals to make sure that no one should get, it should be safe. People have an open wound on your body, or even anything that's going into dirty water, sakonis nefashos. So especially with corona, you know, especially all these diseases going around, it's a very serious matter. So just because they can clean, the water itself, there's always the issue of the water in the bar that is not being properly cleansed and treated with chemicals to remove any bacteria that can be very dangerous to people. And just relying that when the water mingles with the good water has enough chemicals and has been treated enough to counteract any danger that may be lurking in the bar. It's not even one, two, three bars. It's very complicated how all this stuff works. Okay, any event, let's go further. It says here, a menida does not need ma'im chayim. A menida just needs a regular bar. So now he says the second interpretation, what I told you originally means, when it says over here, mainly means water of purification. Okay, water of purification. The chafal b'shemos nifrodim. Why then does it say the word chatas and mainida? So he says, poetic repetition. poetic repetition, chatas and mei nida, both meaning exactly the same thing. Chatas means water of purification, and nida means water of purification. Like it says in the Torah, mei nida. Or it means, no, it means a regular mikvah, a regular mikveh mayim, that's not mayim chayim, which is sufficient for a regular or nida to immerse in, who does not need mayim chayim. So chatas means the water of purification. Okay, so Rabbi Mai asks, he asks the question, we first start in the beginning, he asks a very good question over here, why is the word chatas? Chatas and not chatos. Chatas has a connotation that smichus, that it goes together with the word ulanida. If you learn ulanida means, it means water of purification, so then it makes sense why it says chatas with a patach under the test, because the two words really are the same. It's part of the same expression. But if you're going to learn like the second interpretation, the word nida is something entirely different. It means a mikveh mayim, just a regular bathtub that has been connected to a bar and has nothing to do with mayim chayim. So there are two separate concepts being presented. There is the chatos and there is ulanida. You would expect that the nikud on the word chatas should not be chatas, but should be chatos. The fact that it says chatas, which is a smichus form of the word, which lends itself to be read together with the word ulanida, it would seem that we're discussing the same thing. All right, you can argue, you can say maybe not. Let's go to the next pasuk base in the Mitzvot of Achris lo tesefes beor amar velo yizachu od. This is a lot of repetition over here. Es hanaviim heim neviyei hasheker. Okay, it sounds like a pasuk lifted right out of Sefer Yirmiyah. I'm willing to bet you in Sefer Yirmiyah, 90% of the time when it says the word Navi in Sefer Yirmiyah, it means a Navi Sheker. Navi in Yecheskel, so probably you know, probably the whole Tanakh. If you do a study and you on the computer and you extract every time it says the word Navi in Nevi'im and Ksuvim, maybe even in the Torah, you will discover the word Navi means a Navi Sheker. And even though when we talk about, the Navi, you go to a Shir, and the Rav says, the Navi Yeshaya, the Navi. So we think that a Navi is a word which is symbolic of pure truth, pure, unadulterated emes. In Tanakh, that's not what the word Navi means.
Chumash also.
Chumash, Navi Sheker. Navi Sheker. More often than not, the word Navi represents Sheker in its purest form. And that's what it means over here. The Navi Sheker, Ruach HaTumah Hu HaYetzer Hara, Avir Min Aretz, Ritzon Olamai HaYetzer Hara Lo Yihyeh Oid. This is a continuation of the previous parak, where Hashem is going to remove. And in fact, Rav Mechol, this is something which Rav Mechol has expertise. We've come to learn that the chapter breaks were done by the Christians, and they mean absolutely nothing, the chapter breaks. And every time there's a chapter break, it's basically a statement of apikorsis. There's a statement here to talk about Yashka, about they're obsessed. They're obsessed. There are certain people that their brains are totally damaged with an obsession about certain things. Hamev and Yavin. And the Christians,
I don't have any particular expertise.
You've given some really good examples. You've really enlightened us many, many times on this matter.
Look at it when we reach it.
There is here no parsha, but there is no samachomem over here in these psukim.
And it starts with a new
Bayamahu. Yeah, but it says Bayamahu. Go back to pasuk Yidalef, the previous parak. In the previous parak, it says also Bayamahu. There's no chapter break over there. Go back to pasuk Ches. Bayamahu. What?
Theme break.
Why? What's there's no theme break. So there's also every time Bayamahu, it's the same Bayamahu. It doesn't make sense over here. There's obviously there's some type of
code. Not necessarily. If there's a as we sometimes say, there's a process. You know, there's a over time. It doesn't necessarily have to be all stages at once on one particular day.
If we were putting in chapter breaks, okay. I highly doubt anyone here would put a chapter break in this pasuk. Because if you go back to pasuk Vav, it says, Bayoim hahu osim es alufa yehudu kichiyor. It says, now pasuk Ches, Bayoim hahu yogen Hashem biyad yeshva yushalayim. Then go to Pasik Yud Aleph. Bayoy Mahu Yigdal Hamispe Biushalayim, Kimispar Hadadrimoin. And in fact, we're talking about the elimination of, according to the Chazal Bedon yesterday, of the Yetzer Hara, the Asa HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Shachat L'malach HaMoves. And now we come to Pasuk Yud Gimel Pasuk Aleph, Bayoy Mahu, Yem Mokar Niftoch, and it goes on to explain in Pasuk Begay Vahoyo Bayoy Mahu, it's part of that theme where it says, Acharis Es Shemoy Suat Sabim in Oretz, V'lo Yizroch Ve'od V'gamas HaNevi'im Aruch HaTom Avim in Oretz. It's the same idea as what it said in the previous parak, the elimination of the Yetzer Hara, the Malach HaMoves. That's what we learned yesterday.
I don't see anything that's obviously of something that...
I think it's very similar, because here it says Mokar Niftach, and they're learning that Mokar Niftach a reference to Yashka. They want to emphasize he's going to be the new savior of the world. He's the new Mokar, the new source of life. Because there's no need for there to be a chapter break over here. There's no Samach, there's no pay. It continues the theme of Yemos HaMashiach, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Osa, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Shochan, LeMalach HaMoves, the Malach HaMoves is the Yetzer Hara, is the Satan, and it's going to be a new world, a world that's a lot better. They see this Pasuk in their demented minds. You see an obsession. Like I told you, there are people out there have an agenda. And everything is about their agenda. Everything that happens in the world is about one thing only, right? Whatever happens in the world, people are obsessed with the vaccine, okay? The anti-vaxxers. Everything is about the vaccine. If Bill Gates gets divorced, it's because of the vaccine, okay? If there's a crisis on the border, it's because of the vaccine. If there's this, there are people, we all know people like this. People that are, they have an agenda, whatever their agenda is, and everything has to fit into their agenda. Okay, sick minds. Here, the Christians, they have this sickness. Everything has to fit into their agenda about this person. This person who was a mamzer. Okay, that's what Chazal tells us about him. Okay, there's more than one, there are a few of them. Okay, everything has to fit into this agenda. They see here a pasuk that says, "Bayoymahu yiyem mokar nif." Ooh, a mokar niftach, a new source of life, a new spring, symbolic. Ah, who else does it refer to? So they have to put a chapter break in order to highlight and emphasize the sickness of theirs. There's a continuous theme in the chapter breaks in Tanakh. It's always comes back. Hakol hoylech el mokar mecha. Always comes back. Into a sickness in looking at everything about this person. And it seems pretty obvious that's what's going on over here. Why is there a chapter break here in the middle of these psukim? There's a series of bayoymahu, and whether we're discussing the same day, whether we're discussing different days, it's all part of a series. There's no reason why we should put a chapter break here than putting a chapter break before. And over here would appear to be the worst place to put a chapter break, because the psukim that we read a few psukim before are describing exactly the same theme of the elimination of the Yetzer Hara, the Malach HaMoves, and the Satan, and we're just elaborating upon it a little bit more. And all of a sudden, oh, there's a chapter break. It's very obvious why they put a chapter break. Corruption. Because this pasuk, it talks about something new. Like you said, Michal, replacement. Their beliefs are going to, their person is going to replace our religion.
There are books written about what they call all the Christological references in the Bible.
This is what appears. Okay, let's go back to the Mitzvot of it. This is again the second list on the page. Avim and Aretz return. Lema Hayetzah Hara Lo Yeoid. The Lo Yimotz Od Mishu Yinabed Sheker Kitimol Aretz Deo Viakiru Hasheker. Pasuk Gimel Ki Yinovei Return Lema Nivua Sheker. What's going to happen now? We're describing over here that a child will get up and say words of prophecy. And what's going to happen next page? The next page on page 841. Yolidov. Omar lit toisefes beur ki kvar zohar ovi v'imo. Okay, this is like the joke I tell you all the time. My father always told me that there was a kid in his class. The principal came into the room. He says, "Get out of class. Go home. Do not come back until you bring with you your mother or your father or one of your parents. Don't come back until you bring your mother or your father or one of your parents. Okay? So that's really what it says in this pasuk. It says over here, V'yomrei lav, Aviv, V'imo, your father, your mother, Yolidav, and your parents. Excuse me, what do you need the word Yolidav? If it already says your mother and your father, who else are you referring to? The Yolidav are the people who gave birth to you, your parents. So who asked this question? The Mitzvah David asked this question. What is going on? Why the repetition? Yolidav. Omar, so he answers on page 841, L'Toisefes Be'or, for an elaboration of explanation, Ki Kvar Zohar Aviv V'Imo. It's just an expression. It doesn't mean, don't get worked up over this. This is not to be taken literally, because then there is redundancy. Lo Sichye V'Gomer, Loi Me'horo'oi Shetishorchai. What?
Maybe it means people who we might think are his parents, but they're not really his parents.
So when we live in the 21st century, you can be very creative what this means in the 21st century, yeah. Right? You can say, you know, his adopted parents, his biological parents, his Facebook parents, his Twitter parents, and with all this genetic engineering, today they can genetically engineer human beings. You take a couple of genes from this person and a couple of genes from that person, and from a couple, maybe from an animal also. You have the koichos of an animal. You can genetically engineer people today. You really can do this. They do this in laboratories.
Did you see the article I sent you?
Yes, I saw. I read it very quickly. It was very bizarre, that article. What can I tell you, Armachal? That was over the top. Okay, thank you. I have to go back and I have to read it more carefully, but it seemed to be, wow, really, really, really strange world we're living over here. Okay, ki masha dibarta b'shem Hashem u'sheker. So they're cursing this person's parents. In this pasuk, we are discussing a story where a human being, he gives over words of prophecy that are sheker. And the audience, when they listen and discover the falsehood of the words of this person, they curse not him, they curse his parents. Not just his biological parents, Aviv V'Imo, Yolidav. An emphasis on all those people who are responsible for bringing into this world and raising this creature who has given over to us words of prophecy that are false and have caused us enormous harm. Loi mehor ro'oi she'tishoer chai. It's not fitting that your parents remain alive. What a curse, huh? Ki masha dibarta b'shem Hashem. Because this that you have spoken in the name of God, sheker, is false. Ki midatom yakiru hasheker. The audience, the people, will finally wake up and see the sheker. Ulchein yidkiru oisoi. Now it goes on to say that they curse the parents, but they murder the person who gave over the false prophecy. Yidkiru oisoi bacherev, they murder him with a sword, they stab him. Bavor hi novoi, because he gave over words of prophecy, besheker, that are false, velo yochusu olav, and they do not show him mercy. Pasuk Dalet. Pasuk Dalet says, "Vayimu on that day, Yevoshu Hanavim, Ritzon Olam Hakasher Nevi'a Hashekar Yoshuvu Mechetam V'Sochul Aleihem Ruach Hanavuah." When the Nevi'a Sheker, when they do teshuva, and it rests upon them a real prophet of spiracy, Os Hanavim Mahem Yevosh Kol Echad Mechezyonoi Hashekar Shnibei Me'os Bihinov Oisoy Ata Nevuas Emes. When they now give over words of prophecy that tremors, Ki Yireh Hahevdel Ki Yisrael Ha'or Menachashach. Now this pasuk and this parish of the Mitzudas David, we have to emphasize, is one of a kind. This, we have never ever seen anything like this. You have to stop and pause to realize what he just said, which is totally out of the ballpark. Again, we've never ever, I don't ever recall seeing anything remotely like this. He's basically saying that to be a Novi Sheker, you have to, once upon a time, be a Navi Emes. or at least have potential to be a Navi Emes. You know, there's an expression.
Or in Sanhedrin talks about it in greatly. How come? You
know? We don't look at it like that. When we look at people who are discovered to be Nevi'e Sheker, we murder them, they're killed, Misas Bezdin, and we realize the person is so far removed from holiness. This fellow doesn't ever have a chance to be a Navi Emes. A person who's a faker, would you ever fathom that he can be reformed, he can be rehabilitated, or he can one day be a Navi Emes? Okay, a criminal who committed the worst crimes, a bank robber, would you ever let a person who engaged in armed robbery or held up a bank? This is a stick up. A guy walks into a bank, he pulls out a weapon, this is a stick up, give me all the money in the bank. Would you ever fathom that such a person, you would let him one day work in the bank? You put him in prison, he serves a sentence, gets out of prison. Oh, there's an opening, there's a job opening to work in the bank, to be a teller in the bank. That's what I want to do. Would you ever fathom they would take a person who committed a crime to rob a bank to now let him be a bank teller, to be an executive in the bank?
Yes, unfortunately, then we find out that, like in the school system, they were letting bad people.
Okay, in America, in America, of course, in America. In America, anything goes, right?
It's everywhere. They let bad people do bad things again.
Plus
limitations on criminal background checks.
A person that was once convicted of a crime, even after he pays the price for his crime and he sits in jail, and once he's allowed to re-enter society, there are limitations. There are limitations.
They usually put them in charge of security because they know how to...
Well, it's true. The CIA, they hire the hackers to work for them because they know the malacha. Okay? They know the malacha. That's what they blame. No, they blame George W. Bush for no, no. Who do they blame? They blame Clinton, I think, for 9/11. Why? Because I don't remember my history, but the CIA used to only hire criminals. to work for the CIA, to be out there to do espionage, you have to hire people that have experience in this. They just work for you. It comes with a territory. There's a certain type of personality who is ideal to get the job done. So you go to prison and you make a deal with these people. We'll let you out of prison if you'll work for us. We'll send you to another country. We'll give you a new identity. And we'll
have seen too many movies.
I have seen too many movies. That's right. But no, it comes with the territory. And I'm not mistaken, it was Clinton or Bush. I think it was Clinton. When he came into office, he said, no more of this. We only hire clean... You know who told this to me? Yaakov Kornreich. Michal, you know who he is, Yaakov Kornreich? He writes the whole Yated. He writes the whole Yated from beginning to end. And Pinchas Lifshitz, he writes a little bit. He lets him write a few lines here and there. But Yaakov Kornreich, that's what he does the whole week. He writes the entire Yated. He knows this stuff inside out. And he told this to me. He says it comes with the territory. And the big mistake the United States of America made was, leading up to 9/11, was they no longer took people to work for them who have a criminal background. They denied people in the CIA, anyone with a criminal background can no longer work because they had too much trouble.
A lot of them were the Nazis.
Too much trouble. Well, that was going back. That was another, that's a whole different era.
But that was the same idea.
And they lost intelligence. Very critical intelligence was lost because it comes with the territory. The people that know how to gather the intelligence that is needed are people who once upon a time used to be criminals. They know how to get it done. And that led to a lack of intelligence, which led up to 9/11. He told us to be here.
You know, 9/11 could easily have been prevented because when they raided the place, the people who bombed it 8 years before
they had all the information.
They found all these documents. Right. And they couldn't get anyone to translate them.
Let's not go off on a tangent.
The Sephardi Jews came and offered to translate them, and they turned them down.
This Mitsudoi Stavi, we're going to start with this, is awesome. It is just off the charts. Because he's saying over here, we have over here people who are... Now, if this is true in America regarding a person that commits a crime, it's unfathomable that a person that has let's say, done anything to children, let's say he has touched children inappropriately and sat in prison for such a crime, it is unfathomable today in America that such a person would be allowed, when he comes out of prison, to go work with children. Mark, you agree with me? Even that is it's unfathomable. A person that's been... It is unfathomable, right? A person that served time for such a crime is going to be allowed to work in a school. It's just not possible. If that is true regarding something physical, al achas kama v'kama, could you imagine the person who is guilty of being a Navi Sheker now could be rehabilitated, where he will merit the highest level of Kedusha to give over words of prophecy, for real words of prophecy? Do you know what it means to be a Navi Emes? The sanctity, the Kedusha? The Rambam writes all the conditions, what it means to be a Navi Emes? To have a connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu on such a level? Have prophecy, a Navi, we're learning about the Nevi'im? It's unfathomable. The people that when we learn in Yeshaya and Yirmiyah and Yecheskel, and you learn about the Nevi'im Sheker, what do you walk away with? These are lowlifes. These are charlatans. These are people who are able to pull the world over you. Shabsai Tzvi. Could you imagine Shabsai Tzvi will be a Navi Emes? Shabsai Tzvi is one of the greatest criminals Judaism has ever seen. The fraud that he pulled over, the damage that he caused Klal Yisrael, was still reeling ad hayom hazeh from what he has done, the Klal Yisrael. How he fooled Klal Yisrael into believing Mashiach was here, the damage he caused the psyche of Klal Yisrael is unimaginable.
Yeah.
Ad hayom hazeh. Could you? He's another. He was another Yisheker. It's mamish what he was.
A lot of the historians nowadays, they don't blame him. They blame somebody who pushed him to do
nothing.
He was bipolar.
Nothing. They were all bipolar. He was bipolar. The Shabbos didn't even know what bipolar meant in those days.
Right. But he really went into trances in real life.
Could you imagine Shabsai Tzvi being a Navi Emes? Impossible. It's unfathomable. It's unfathomable. You know, in the Hasidic world, do they go to town on Shabsai Tzvi? You can't imagine the words they use to describe him. It's unfathomable.
For the record, I don't agree. I think that the world allows themselves to be fooled, or they allow themselves to think that people are doing tshuva and changing. That's what we see in the world. I don't know if there's such a hard and fast rule.
There is a point, though. There is a certain cutoff point. It's true. Everyone can do teshuva. We're the biggest believers in the koyach of teshuva.
Right. So.
But let me just give you a case in point. An example: Shabsai Tzvi. Could you fathom Shabsai Tzvi one day being a Navi Emes? Impossible. It's not possible. It's not possible in our minds after you study Shabsai Tzvi. And look what the Mitzvot David says. It's just shocking what he says, how he reads Shah and the Pasik. He reads the Shah and the Pasik. We'll finish with this. Ye Pasik Galid, Ye Voshu Hanavim. The prophets will be embarrassed. Just substitute prophets with Shabsai Tzvi. Ritzoy Neloimar, Ka'asher, Nevi'ei HaSheker, the false prophets who tell you that he's Mashiach, Mashiach is here, everyone should come to Eretz Yisrael, and everyone can eat chazer, and everyone can do all these crazy things that he did. Yoshuvu mechetam, he will do teshuva. The sochul, when they will do teshuva, and now the sochul, it will descend upon him, aleihem, ruach nevuah, the real deal. It'll be a Navi Emes. Oz then, Hanevi Mohem, Yevoishu, they'll be embarrassed of their past. Kol Echad Mechez Yoinai HaSheker, he'll be embarrassed of all of his false words, his false predictions. Shenibe Me'oz, when now, Behi Nov Oisoi Ata, when he now gives over words of prophecy today, Nevuas Emes. Kiyireh, because Shabsai Tzvi will now himself experience the difference, a hevdel, between what he did in the past to what he's doing now, ki yisroin, like the advantage, Ha'or min ha'choshech. Now, if I would say something like this, I have no doubt I would be excommunicated.
I think it's cool. I think it's great most of what he's saying. He's making a point.
Maybe in theory, a lot of things in theory and on paper, they look very nice. But in the world of reality, it doesn't work like that.
Okay.
There are certain people, they cross the red line, and they're done.
So, got to keep voting for the same politicians who are crooks. The whole thing is...
Okay, I don't know what to tell you. I hear what you're saying, but it is a shocking, shocking interpretation of a pasuk. Because I don't believe, I don't recall ever learning, when we learned Yirmiyah, Yecheskel, all the Treyasar, and everything we've learned, I don't recall ever hearing that a Navi Sheker can be rehabilitated into a Navi Emes. A Navi Sheker, a Navi is not a politician.
Once you
if I told you that a Navi Emes can become a Navi Sheker, that you'd accept, right?
If you tell me that a Navi Emes becomes a Navi Sheker, then I can understand.
Why is it so hard to comprehend?
But once he becomes a Navi Sheker, he's crossed the red line.
Right.
And there's no coming back. I never heard such a thing like this. And not only is he saying this pshat, theoretically, he's reading this into the words of the pasuk. The pasuk, we will conclude, the pasuk, the Amrei Lav, they're going to say to him, to this person, number one, we curse your parents. Aviv v'imo yolidov lo sichya. They should be cursed. They should not live because of what you have done. Ki sheker dibarta b'shem Hashem. And then udi koru, they're going to kill him. This particular fellow, why does he get killed, not the next pasuk? I don't know. This one, he'll be stabbed to death. Udi koru, avihu v'imo yolidov. They will. How do we actually read this? Okay, who are they going to stab? The parents or him? They're going to stab him. See, Kimidai tell me doesn't even translate it over here. Doesn't even translate over here in the Mitzvah stuff how this supposed to mean. Udikaru aviu viimo yoludobino. His parents are going to kill him. It seems to translate over here that the parents of this fellow will stab him to death for what the shame that they have brought upon them. We'll have to come back to this tomorrow. But then the pasuk Dalit says, "V'hoya bayamahu yevoshu." It will be on that day, yevoshu hanaviim. The false prophets will be put to shame. Ish miches yonai. Each one of them from the vision, the false vision that they presented. Behinov oisoi, when they now, today, give over to the Jewish people words of prophecy that are emes. Wow, a Navi Sheker can be rehabilitated into a Navi emes? You realize what it says here? It's like, what? That's how he learns. That's how the Mitzvah's Dov learns Shah. Not everyone's going to learn Shah like this. But he learns Shah that the Navi Sheker will be rehabilitated into a Navi Emes, and then he himself will do teshuva, realizing how foolish he was when he gave over words of false prophecy. That's like today you take a person who is guilty of committing the worst, heinous crimes, and after he serves his term in prison, he's allowed to come back and do what he did before. That's not acceptable in society. And if that's not acceptable in society, al achas kama v'kama ben b'neshul kal v'chema, when it comes to matters of kedusha, of prophecy, kedusha tahara, which have much higher standards, and yet that's how he learned shah in the pasuk. It's incredible what he says. Okay, we'll have to stop and take a ritual break. It's very, very late. After the break, I want to learn about different yom of shavuos. Specifically, I want to focus some time on the concept of Sveika Dioma, an analysis or a discussion on all the different types of levels of Sveika Dioma, being that Shavuos is unique, because Shavuos, there really should not be a Yom Tov Sheni for Shavuos.
Right.
It's 50 days after Pesach, and by this time we already know when Pesach was, so why do we have 2 days of Shavuos, and by extension, Let's study the nature of the 2 days of Yom Tov and all of the other Mo'adim, and there's some very interesting things that I came across. We'll discuss when we come back in a few moments.